Reading from Swapopali Lamrit, chapter 2. From 1965 until 1970, Srila Prabhupada had concentrated mainly on establishing Krishna consciousness in America. His plan had been that if the Americans turned to Krishna consciousness, the rest of the world would follow. Although his preaching to the English-speaking people had begun in India, some 60 years of single-handed endeavor, they had convinced him that Indians were neither too absorbed in politics, too ignorant of their spiritual heritage, or too crippled by poverty to seriously accept Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he had not been successful. But in the United States, success had come. Clearly, America was the prime field for implanting Krishna consciousness. Yet, Prabhupada found the West uncultured and uncivilized. If a trace of civilization remained anywhere, he would often say, it was in India, the heart of the original Vedic culture. By 1970, he had demonstrated through his extensive traveling and preaching that he intended to establish the Krishna consciousness movement, not only in the U.S., but all over the world, especially in India. Even accepting that preaching in the United States had and preaching in India were equally important, still, the preaching in the United States was going well without Prabhupada's constant direct management. What he had begun, his American disciples could continue. But in India, Prabhupada could not allow his disciples to manage ISKCON. He saw how often and how easily the Indians were able to cheat his disciples. Half of ISKCON's work in India was being spoiled, he said, due to his disciples being cheated. If they put on a panda program, they might end up paying several times the standard cost. The only way for ISKCON to develop in India would be under Prabhupada's direct management. It was in this temple. The Prabhupada asked the disciples, can you see? See what? Don't see? And Prabhupada, you cannot see? No, Prabhupada, you can't see. So Prabhupada said, the workers are stealing the coconut. They're not supposed to do that. They are paid to do their job. They are not paid to steal the coconut. So Prabhupada was seeing them stealing coconut, and he was not happy with it. So he asked the disciples, can't you see? Nobody was seeing, but Prabhupada saw everything. So Prabhupada, being very careful that his Western disciples are not being cheated, prefect of Manish, ISKCON in India, directly by himself. While in America, he allowed the disciples to do the management. Because they were sincere. Devotees were not being cheated as they were being cheated in India. Beginning in 1970 with a small band of American disciples, Prabhupada had traveled from place to place in India as a model sannyasi, opening a great new field for ISKCON. Now he wanted to construct big temples in India, three in particular, one in Vrindavan, one in Mayapur, and one in Bombay. As early as 1967, he had attempted to make an American house for his disciples in Vrindavan, Mayapur. Being the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya was especially important. And Bombay was India's major city, the gateway to India. As with most of Prabhupada's big plans, even his closest disciples couldn't fully comprehend the scope of his vision. But Prabhupada knew what he wanted, and he knew it all depended on Krishna. Gradually, he began to unfold his plans. Temple construction, he said, was secondary to book distribution and publication. But Krishna consciousness was drawn on two parallel lines, just as a train runs on two rails. One rail was Bhagavad Marga, the other Pancharatrikal Vidhi. Bhagavad Marga referred to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, hearing and chanting about Krishna and disseminating the message of Krishna. The second rail, Pancharatrikal Vidhi, referred to the rules and regulations for worshipping the deity in the temple. Of the two, Bhagavad Marga was the most important. Although great liberated souls like Haridas Thakura could remain in perfect Krishna consciousness simply by chanting Hare Krishna constantly, Prabhupada knew that his disciples, with their restless natures and past sinful habits, needed a special purification of worshipping the Lord in the temple. Therefore, one of his reasons for wanting to establish temples in India was to purify his disciples by giving them elaborate deity worship. Temples, however, were also for preaching. No one listened to a poor man, Prabhupada would say. And he therefore wanted to construct palatial buildings to attract the masses to Krishna consciousness. Especially, he wanted this in India, where the tradition of temple worship still existed. Building temples and worshipping the deity was secondary to publishing and distributing books, but it was not to be neglected. Prabhupada prepared to give temple construction in Mayapur, Vrindavan, and Bombay as much of his attention as necessary. In Vrindavan, every morning you hear Sri Krishna Balaram temple distributed such an amount of books, 1,000. The books are not distributed in the street, they are distributed in the temple, the temple courtyard. It means that the temple is also very important. Because in Kali Yuga, everywhere in the world, in Kali Yuga, majority of us doesn't have a very high piety to go to walk to the temple. I want to be a devotee. Or to approach a person who is sitting under a tree that I want to join you. We identify with something material as a connection to Krishna. Therefore, temple is necessary. If there is a beautiful temple with wonderful facility like this, it is by itself a preaching. Because many people would like to identify with something which is wonderful. So thousands of people will come to the temple. Not merely for worshipping, for pure love for Godhead, but because of the material facility. Majority of people goes for this. Therefore, there is a need to make the bridge. For pure devotees like Haridas Thakura, there is no need for temple, there is no need for deity. Deity is already in their heart. So they see Krishna constantly. So for them, there is no need for temple. They already have a temple in their heart. But that is only few people that are on that level. Majority are on a lower level that need something to see, to identify with. So though Papa knew, printing and distributing books are most important, the temple is not less important also. Therefore, he did everything simultaneously. After all, as a preaching movement, when we preach to people, and become attracted, where would they go? You cannot keep 100 people under a tree. You need a shelter. You need the food. Therefore, the temple is necessary. So Prabhupada gave attention to the temples, Mayapur, Vrindavan, and Bombay. He gave equal attention to the temples. And majority of people are not used to making sacrifice to know God. Austerity which is required for understanding Krishna. Like the early devotees made a lot of sacrifice. In the beginning there was no wonderful marble temple with beautiful deities. That means there was no Maha Deity Prasada, which we have today. One can walk to the temple and buy. Those days it was not there. Now to go for preaching you need a car, you need a bus. In the beginning those facilities were not there. So people were making sacrifice to make it happen. Today we walk to the temple. Everything is already available. So no sacrifice, no austerity. And for most of us, without the facilities, it will be difficult for us to execute our Krishna conscious activities. So proper intelligence, spirituality, made arrangements that will accommodate everyone on different levels. This is a proper costless mercy. Bombay, November 1971. For a year, the devotees had been living at the Akash Ganga address, two apartments on the seventh floor of a building in the heart of Bombay. But Prabhupada was not satisfied with this. He wanted land in Bombay to build on and to expand. He was determined. Instead of his usual morning walks, he would take long rides in his car to observe various parts of the city. Because many of the ISKCON life members lived in aristocratic Malabar Hill, Prabhupada's disciples thought it a good place for a temple. On several occasions, Prabhupada rode to the top of Malabar Hill and walked around various properties, considering certain large buildings as possible temples. But for one reason or other, he judged them all unacceptable. Then in November, a Mr. N offered to sell ISKCON 5 acres in Juhu, particularly on the shore of the Arabian Sea. As soon as the prophet approached the land, he remembered having seen and considered it years before. In August of 1965, during the weeks before, just before he had left for America, he had been staying at Sindhia Colony. In August of 1965, during the weeks just before he had left for America, he had been staying at Sindhia Colony. In the evening, he had gone to the home of Sindhia Steamship Company owner, Mrs. Sumati Moralji in Juhu, where he had read and explained Srimad Bhagavatam for her and her guests. Several times he had passed this way, this very property, and had thought what a good location it would be for an ashram and a Radha Krishna temple. Although his attention had been absorbed in the task of leaving India, he had still considered the Juhu land. Now he was again in Juhu, reconsidering the same land he had noticed years before. He took it as a reminder from Krishna. The land was overgrown with tall grasses and bushes, and many coconut palms stood throughout. In the back of the property were several tenement buildings. The land bordered on Juhu Road, the main traffic artery. On the Arabian Sea was a brief walk away. The location was good, peaceful, yet remote. Several five-star hotels bordered the nearby beach, and developers were beginning work on other hotels and apartment buildings. When Prabhupada walked along the beach, he liked even more the idea of buying the land. Rich men had weekend homes on the beach, and thousands of Bombayites would be out enjoying the beach on Sundays. Daily, hundreds of Juhu residents used the long, broad seashore for morning walks before going to work. Almost always, people were strolling or gathering there, and yet the beach was clean. The mild waves and open skies were inviting. The locale was ideal not only for hotels but for a Christian concert center. Prabhupada wanted a Jubaland, and although his disciples continued to show him houses in Malabar Hill, he didn't change his mind. His disciples wanted whatever he wanted, yet he had trouble developing enthusiasm for a property so far from the city and with no available housing or temple facility. The difference between the true devotee. And other devotees, he sees differently. At that time, Prabhupada was seeing now, not that time. But some were seeing that time. Srila Prabhupada was not seeing that time, Prabhupada was seeing now, today. So there were contradictions. The disciples wanted a place which is already developed. Facilities are there. At that time, this was a jungle. Big bush. Only coconut trees, mosquitoes and snakes and scorpions. Why should one go to such place when there is really a beautiful developed place? That preaching can be easy. Srila Prabhupada had different vision. He was seeing today. What is today? That Radha Krishna temple is standing here and thousands of people are coming every day. He was not seeing the bushes. That is different. So though the devotee was showing him to that place, his mind was here. And he continued to develop interest, considering that Krishna wants to stand here, even though at that time it was a bush. After all, a city was developed by some people. So what is wrong also developing another city? So Prabhupada developed his own Juhu city. What is Radha Krishna deity? And now, heaven on earth building is here. And thousands of people are coming. And Prabhupada put deities here without a temple. And he told Krishna, when Prabhupada put deities here, there was no temple, there was no building. He said, stay here, I will build a temple later. Krishna didn't complain. Because he knows the devotion of his devotee. Krishna didn't complain. Why are you keeping me here? He didn't complain. Krishna said, alright, I have trust that you fulfill their promise. So I will stay here for you. Mr. N, the owner of the 5-acre plot, has set a reasonable price and seemed friendly and sincere. Yet, risks were involved in such transactions. And in this case, Prabhupada even found reason for suspicion. Through his lawyer, he learned that Mr. N had previously entered into an agreement to sell this same land to the CE company, but had later cancelled the agreement. The CE company had then filed a suit against Mr. N for breach of contract. If the Bombay High Court decided in the CE company's favor, the land would be awarded to them. When proper secretary questioned Mr. N about this entanglement, Mr. N assured him the C company could not win the suit, but in any case, Eastcon could withhold a certain portion of their payment until the litigation with C was settled. Mr. N was a well-known figure in Bombay. Formerly the sheriff of Bombay and a honorary judicial police position, he was now publisher editor of one of the largest daily English newspapers in Bombay. He was wealthy, owning several properties in Juhu and Bombay, and influential, not a man one would want to oppose. To purchase the Juhu land under the present circumstances required boldness. Which property was, or which property is? He is a bold man. In late December, Prabhupada met with Mr. N and Mrs. N at their home in the Theosophical Colony in Juhu. Mr. N's home was on the beach, and thus the visit afforded Prabhupada another opportunity to appreciate the value and beauty of Juhu Beach, with its borders of palms leaning towards the sea. The Theosophical Colony was a private neighborhood of attractive homes with luxuriant lawns and flower gardens and many exotic birds. Ashoka trees grew on either side of Mr. N's driveway, and a line of palm trees standing just inside the massive stone wall encircled the property. A gardener opened the gate for Prabhupada and a few disciples with him. Mr. N was a short, stocky man with a receding hairline. His hair was clipped short, and his round face was pockmarked. He appeared to be in his 50s. Mrs. N had a fair complexion and, unusual for an Indian, wore her hair short. Prabhupada had brought flower garlands and prasadam from the Radha Krishna deities of Eastern Bombay, and this he offered to Mr. and Mrs. N. Mr. N invited his guests to sit with him and his wife on the front porch, which faced a historic garden. Srila Prabhupada openly expressed his appreciation of the Juhu land, but admitted he had very little money. Mr. N, however, seemed inclined towards Prabhupada and said he wanted to sell him the property. Quickly, he reached a verbal agreement. To Mrs. N, however, the agreement seemed too liberal. But when she objected, her husband overruled her. Prabhupada and Mr. N agreed on the down payment of 200,000 rupees. After making the down payment, Eastcon will immediately receive the conveyance. Eastcon will pay the remaining balance of 1.4 million rupees later in regular installments. Prabhupada negotiated further regarding the down payment, offering to pay 50,000 rupees now and another 50,000 later, at which time Eastcon would be allowed to move onto the land. As soon as they paid the remaining 100,000 rupees, the down payment would be complete and Mr. N would give them the deed. Mr. N agreed. Srila Prabhupada was always one to think carefully over such business transactions. He has said that if a businessman tells you, "Sir, for you I am making no profit," you should know he is lying. Therefore, even if ISKCON's early days in New York City, when the real estate shark, Mr. Price, had posed a well-wisher of the devotees, Prabhupada had been suspicious. Mr. Price had, in fact, cheated the devotees, despite Prabhupada's warning to them. Now, as then, Prabhupada was suspicious, but he wanted the Juhu land and would take the risk. Prabhupada had taken similar chances. At Jhansi in 1953, he had occupied a building, although he had had little legal standing or financial security. And in his first storefront in New York, as well as in his largest building to date, the Watseka Avenue Church in Los Angeles, he had moved in without assurance of the monthly payment. Practically the entire success of his movement had come by his taking one risk after another for Krishna. When the devotees in Boston had written to Prabhupada that they had rented a big house for $1,000 a month, calculating that they would be able to make the payment by dramatically increasing their back-to-God sales, Prabhupada had approved and had even commended their example to others. So if risk were involved in Bombay, that was only natural. Once committed to the land, Prabhupada began to unfold his vision for a grand project in Bombay. On December 22nd, he wrote to Jamuna, "Here in Bombay, we have got good prospects to purchase a very large land in Juhu for a very cheap price, just in the middle of a rich neighborhood. We shall build our camp there and begin constructing a temple immediately, and later on, we shall develop a large hotel and school. There is also a chance of getting a nice bungalow in Bombay city also. So in general, we shall make our headquarters in Bombay and also build up Vrindavan and Mayapur." Prabhupada has told his disciples, "You know, this case is hopeless. This is a hopeless case. But you know it very well that I never lose hope in anything." So, taking risk for Krishna was a natural thing for Prabhupada. And that proved his confidence in Krishna. Taking risk for Krishna means a demonstration of one's confidence in Krishna. So, Prabhupada is demonstrating his confidence in Krishna throughout his life. And apart from that, he sees the future. Therefore, it is not difficult for him to take the risk because he knows the future. And Krishna will come in. Because he's not fighting for himself, he's fighting for Krishna. While devotees around the world are delighted to hear Prabhupada's plan for a Bombay center, devotees in Bombay had mixed feelings. To envision a temple rising from what was little more than a jungle tract was not easy. Nor was it easy to envision the 5-star ISKCON hotel Prabhupada spoke of. The tenement buildings in the rear of the land were fully occupied, and according to Indian law, the tenants could not be removed. If the devotees move onto the land, they will have to erect temporary housing, maybe even a temporary temple, and the land was mosquito-ridden and steaming with rats. Jew was a small, almost isolated neighborhood without wealthy Eastern supporters. Although Prophet had Prophet and land speculators predicted that Jehu would grow, at present it was only a village of about 2,000. To reside at Siju would be a drastic contrast to the comfortable Akash Ganga building in downtown Bombay. Kamakrishna explained to Prabhupada, "We are Westerners. We cannot live like this. We need door knobs and running water. Don't you want to become purified?" Prabhupada replied, "Purification will not come from comfortability or comfortable life. Purification comes from austerity. That is why we see people going to the forest to perform austerity. They are doing it deliberately because they know the results. When the Bombay devotees learned of Srila Prabhupada's response to Tamal Krishna, the words, "Don't you want to become purified?" went deep into their hearts. They knew that Prabhupada was asking them to become more austere and that it was for their ultimate benefit. They began to regard moving to Jehu as a formidable spiritual challenge rather than a drudgery. Developing the Jehu property was important to their spiritual master, and it was something greater and more wonderful than they at present realized. Prabhupada knew he was asking his disciples to make a great sacrifice, but he could not avoid it. A sacrifice, and Prabhupada is requesting the disciples to make, it is not for him. It is for the benefit of the disciples, who is enjoying it? The disciples. So Prabhupada has come to use us to do something that will benefit ourselves, not for himself. And he has the perfect medicine. Not just having the perfect medicine, he knows the perfect way to give it. And whatever difficulties he was asking his disciples to undertake was prepared. He was prepared to undertake to as much greater degree himself. On the one hand, he didn't think that living on the developed Jehu property would be too difficult for his disciples, provided they maintained cleanliness and chanted Hare Krishna. Yet, he knew that because they were Westerners, they would find it hard. A preacher, nevertheless, had to make sacrifices, not artificially or arbitrarily, but to expand the Christian conscious movement. Sometimes serving Krishna was pleasurable, sometimes difficult. In either case, a devotee had but to do the needful, acting as a menial servant of the spiritual master. Prabhupada counseled his Bombay disciples, impressing on them his vision for Eastern Bombay. Although all of them were ready to follow his decision, some of them had been feeling doubtful and weak-hearted. seeing their spiritual master's commitment to the project, however, they vowed to give up their separatist mentalities. Prabhupada then left Jaipur for a week's preaching engagement at the Radha Govind temple. What is the use of a disciple? If we cannot follow the vision of the spiritual master. Because a spiritual master is working for the welfare of the disciples. And like a doctor who knows the disease of the patient, the spiritual master knows how to engage the disciples. After all, taking medicine is not a palatable thing. But one is forced to take it because we know that by taking the medicine, we are going to be cured. So sacrifice is not a palatable thing for conditioned souls. But sacrifice will make one purified. Therefore, following one who knows is beneficial for the followers. And Prabhupada is doing just that, although he knew that the situation is not so comfortable for the Western devotees. But he knows it is necessary and the sacrifice must be done for our purification. Now we are sitting on the sacrifice Prabhupada made and enjoying the vision he had, which was a problem at that time. But now it is a palatable situation. No one walked to ISKCON 5-star building and feel the Bombay jungle experience. Nobody remembers it again. Now we are only remembering what is present, which was the proper costless mercy, his vision he had at that time. Hare Krishna. Any questions from the reading? Yes, Prabhu. While serving the spiritual master or engaging in the process of devotional service, sometimes we encounter some difficulties, right? So, what does it mean that doing the needful or the difficulties, right? That's the question. Any conditioned soul who is surprised, why am I hungry? He's a fool. Why am I hungry? Why am I hungry? He's a fool. Similarly, any person who is questioning, why are there so many problems in this world? He's a fool. Why are there so many problems? Difficulties. He's a fool. Why are there difficulties even in the process of devotional service? He's a fool. Difficulties are there because we have material body. We have material body. Therefore, the word difficult comes in because we have material body. difficult does not exist in the spiritual world. It exists only in the material world. Difficult. Impossible. It cannot be done. It is material language, not spiritual language. See, there should be problems. There should be problems. There should be. You shouldn't be surprised with the problem. You should think of how to resolve the problem. Not be surprised with the problem or why problems are there. We should think of how to solve the problem. And we should be ready for the problems, because this place is meant for that. This place is meant for that. So we should be ready. At any time, there will be difficulties. How to handle it. You shouldn't be disturbed with problems. We shouldn't. We should be expecting it. That it will come, because we are in a difficult place. Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, Mam upetya punar janma dukalayam asaswatam. This is what Krishna said. So why should one be surprised? The difficulties, the problems. This environment is meant for that. So we shouldn't be surprised. We should look for the solution to the problem. And the difficulties are to make us strong. The difficulties are to make us strong. Do the needful means you should find a solution to the problems and move ahead. Don't waste time thinking why there's problem. Why should it be? Why is this? Should there be problem? Do the needful, find a solution to the problem and move ahead. Don't waste time, because this place is meant for that. Do what is necessary. If what is simply wasting time and thinking about the problems and problems and problems, you remain in problem. If you find a solution, you get out. So do the needful means find a solution. Move ahead. Right? Is it clear? Find a solution to the problem and move forward. This is a movement, and we have to move. If you don't move, you have problem. More difficulties will come. So if you don't want problem, just keep moving to the right direction for Krishna consciousness. He mentioned here, provided we maintain regular chanting and standard cleanliness, the problem will be solved. Chanting. Alright? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.